Well, I said I would answer questions tonight, and so let me begin with that. If you don't have questions, then we'll do some other things. I did get one question in the offering plate, so let me deal with that one first. And the question was, what would you consider a good means of discipline and the sorts of offenses each kind of discipline warrants? Well, I think the Bible gives us a good start on discipline when it talks about using the rod. Amen, preacher. We live in a society in America where the bleeding hearts, the humanists, the feminists, the queer crowd, the whole liberal side of our country has come out and said it's wrong to corporally punish your children. They come through with these psychological arguments that hitting only genders more hitting and violence only genders more violence. That is a bunch of junk. How many of you were spanked as children? You don't look like too violent a bunch to me. Now, we are Bible believers. And God says there's a time to use the rod on your children. So we use that as our starting position on discipline. Now, parents, listen to me. You better design a system of discipline for your children. Hit and miss discipline don't work. And turning your head and not noticing things don't work. You've got to discipline your children, and you've got to have a schedule of discipline in your heart and in your mind, and the husband and the wife have to agree on discipline. Now, when I say a schedule, and you might use the word economy of discipline. Let me tell you a story. I was out with, and I'll tell you his name because you don't know him, Brother Paul Andrews, who was a youth pastor at Trinity. And we were out visiting one day, and I was soul winning with him. And he was telling me he had three children. He had his oldest daughter, Deborah. He had a son named Timothy. And he had his youngest daughter named Ashley. Now, Deborah was little Miss Lady. You know, she's very feminine, very ladylike. Little Ashley was a terror. I mean, she was just mean as a snake. And Timothy, in between, he was a whiner. And he just, I don't know what his problem was. And Brother Paul tried to deal with him over this thing. And he was telling me this day, he said, you know, he said, I had such a time with Timothy yesterday. He said, I must have spanked him a dozen times. And that kind of hit me, you know, kind of crosswise. I couldn't ever remember a day where I spanked my kids a dozen times. And I said, well, man, what in the world was going on? And he shared some things with me about he just didn't seem to be able to get Timothy's attention and all. And I said, well, you know, Brother Paul, I said, you need to be careful. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, you need to have an economy in your discipline. And you can't spank your kids for every offense. You with me? See, if you spank your child for picking his nose, then what do you do when he kills somebody? You've got to have an economy. Certain things gender certain responses. And your children ought to have a pretty good idea what kind of response you're going to give them. Now, there are many tools for discipline. Parents, listen to me. There are many tools for discipline. Don't limit yourself. Get a big arsenal. Find what you can use. There's time out. There's taking away privileges. There are giving rewards. The reward and taking away system, you know, of motivating your children. There's assignments that you can do with writing. There's just so many things you can do. Assigning chores. When I worked at Trinity Christian Academy, I was in the junior high building. And the principal I worked for was Dr. Clay Lindstam. Dr. Lindstam had an earned doctorate in education. And he was just a practical guy. And I watched him with those kids, and I watched how he disciplined them. Boy, he just knew how to do it. And he knew how to do it in love. And my son Billy and he got to know each other real well in Bill's seventh grade year. I'd say probably the last week of September, I had a phone call from Brother Lindstam, who's a parent now, when Bill went into the seventh grade. Brother Lindstam, he kind of talked like this, you know, Brother Gilmore, I'm having a little problem with your son Bill. I said, what's the problem? He said, well, Brother Gilmore, he seems to end up in my office an awful lot, you know, and I'm having to deal with him. I said, Brother Lindstam, I'm sorry to hear that you're having a problem with him. But here's what I think we ought to do, Brother Lindstam. I said, you got him 6 hours a day, I got him the rest of the day. If he gives you any problem, you wear him out. And if he gives me any problem, I'll wear him out. He said, well, Brother Gilmore, if that's how you feel, I'll certainly do it. That was the best thing I ever did for Billy. After about a week of getting wore out once a day, and I mean they used the paddle. Brother Lindstam had those boys come in there. He'd say, all right, hands on the desk, and they'd have to lean on the desk. And he just, whoo, a few smacks, got Bill's attention. But I noticed that wasn't all he used. He used different, I saw one day I was watching, we had an eighth grade boy, it was a real handful, and it was just after lunch, you know, Florida gets hot. It was after lunch in a fall afternoon, and I see this boy out there on our grounds, and he's walking the fence picking up papers and trash, and all afternoon. I said, hey, Brother Lindstam, doesn't that boy have any classes? He said, he's mine for today. He's mine. He said, I'm teaching him some lessons here. Another day I saw some boys had to stay after school. I saw them pushing the big old trash cans that they used in the lunchroom. You know how nasty they get? Well, they had the privilege of washing those big old trash cans that day. I'll guarantee you, Dr. Lindstam knew how to get those kids' attention. See? So parents, number one, make an economy, and I'll get back to that. Number two, find what works with your child. Every kid is different. We had three children. Art wasn't too bad. I mean, every once in a while I'd have to talk to him, you know, and slap him around a little bit or kick him or something, or get the lead pipe and rap him once or twice. But Art wasn't too bad. Never had too much of a problem with Arthur. Angela, I'll get back to in a minute, but Bill about wore us out. I spanked Bill more than I spanked the other two combined. Now, I found out I had to deal with Bill one way, Angela one way, and Art one way. I had to learn my kids and know how to handle them. You see, with Angela, hardly ever had to spank her. All I ever had to do as her daddy was look at her with a certain look and a tone of voice, and she melted. I mean, it was over. It was as if I had spanked her. It wouldn't work on Bill, though. Learn your children. And if you have a child now with Angela, I could have very easily broke her had I insisted on spanking and going too far with the discipline. She didn't need it. See? So don't overdo. But find out what works. Some parents have told me, I spank my child, I spank my child, I spank my child. It just don't work. All right? Find out what does work. You've got to get the leverage. Work, experiment, deal with your child until you find something that gives you the leverage you need. Learn your children. Be consistent in your discipline. You know, you can't make something wrong today and let them get away with it tomorrow. And I find a lot of parents nowadays are having that problem. Sometimes parents will get around other adults and their children will do something and they punish them. and they say it's wrong. But any other time, that kid could have done that and got away with it. What you did was you just punished your child for your embarrassment. Hello? See, if that's how you discipline, because you got embarrassed because what your child did, you disciplined them. You're not disciplined for their good. You're disciplined because you're angry at them, because you're embarrassed. That's wrong. Your discipline needs to be consistent. If it's wrong today, it's wrong tomorrow, it's going to be wrong next week, it's going to be wrong when you're 16 years old. Consistent. And I found out a long time ago, one of your greatest friends in discipline is consistency. Over and over and over and over. And pretty soon it registers with them. It might take 2 or 3 weeks. It might take a couple of months till they finally get the message. Consistency. If something is a spanking offense today, then it's a spanking offense tomorrow. And it'll be a spanking offense next week. I've been in the grocery store. This drives me crazy. Get in that grocery store and some mother say, I already told you 4 times, and if I have to tell you again, you already spoke 3 times too many. Take care of business. Children need discipline. They need somebody to set up the rules. They need somebody to say, here are the limits. If you go beyond them, there's a price to pay. And you help your children when you discipline them. You are doing them a favor, believe it or not, when you discipline them. You're helping them develop character. You're helping them develop self-discipline. You're helping them to understand there are limits and lines that I do not step over. Why do you think we have the crime problem in America that we have? Because parents don't discipline children. We have a Dr. Spock generation where children grew up doing whatever they wanted to do. And they get out into society and they think, well, that's the way it is. I can do whatever I want to do. And pretty soon they find themselves in jail. They can't keep a job because their boss isn't going to put up with their junk. Yeah, you might be able to do what you want to do at home, but when you get in the workplace, you're not going to do what you want to do. How many of you want your children to be successful? Can you imagine an executive, a CEO of a corporation, who has no discipline and no character? I don't think so. We have to discipline our children. We have to set up an economy. And by that I'm saying, you need to make up in your mind, you and your husband, what kind of offenses are spanking offenses, what kind of offenses are privilege taking away offenses, what kind of offenses are timeout offenses, and stick to those. Your children, you know, when they're old enough to understand restoration and retribution and those kind of things, if they steal something, you need to make them pay it back. If they break something, you need to help them to replace it so that they learn those principles. I am responsible. Discipline can be a difficult thing, but it's something as parents we're called on to do, and we must do. And we must strive to do a good job with it. Because God says that's our responsibility. Now, never discipline your children in anger. We used to have a man come here, and he came real close to getting the preacher in his face on several occasions because I personally saw him take his foot and kick his little boy. Boom. Just like that. And it was out of anger. And it wasn't one time. And I knew if he did that here, I couldn't imagine what he did at home. You don't discipline children in anger. For one thing, that teaches your children that they can push your buttons. You need to strive to make sure you don't let your kids know they pushed your buttons. As much as lieth within you, when you deal with them, you try to be as cool and calm and collected as you can be. If they think they can rattle your cage, they will. If you're upset, if you're angry, if they've done something that sets you off, you're like a bottle rocket man and you're shooting skyward, don't discipline. Go somewhere, cool down, drink some tea, take a walk, dunk a donut, whatever you need to do, till you're collected again. And then you get that child and you very calmly. Now, here's the problem. Always explain what they did. Make sure they understand the offense. You know, and I'm not criticizing my parents. They did the best they could with me. I thank God for them. But, you know, sometimes I got lickings and I got the belt. I didn't even know why. Your child ought to understand why, what they did wrong. Then you spank him, and I need a volunteer. Jake, you want to come here? Jacob's going to help me. He don't mind if we spank him, does he? You don't mind us spanking in front of everybody, do you? Oh, I'm just kidding you. We wouldn't do that. You need to learn how to spank your children. Now, God gave us a place to spank children. God built it. It's right back here. Padded well. Not really anything you can hurt, so to speak. But it's interesting that God connected it to here. You know how I know that? Because if you apply pressure there, it influences this. Okay? So, you want to make sure when you spank your children that you hit the target. That's one reason you don't do it in anger. Be honest. How many of you ever had occasion to spank your child? I mean, you just started flailing. You end up hitting you more than you hit them. Mm-hmm. Ought never to do that. Spanking. Now, Jacob, here's how we used to do it at Parkdale. We had to spank the kids. Put your hands right down like that. Okay? And sometimes we would even make them lean down over like that. And then we put our hand on their back so they don't get up. And there's your target. Now, the child can't reach back and put his hands back there, so you hit his hands because he's leaning on his hands. And the target's right there for you to take care of business. Then when you're done, stand up, Jacob. Now, you need to spank your children until you get an honest cry. You know, most of them are crying before you ever hit them. If they got any sense, they are. So don't stop just when they start crying. But stop when you sense the crying is sincere. And usually it's 3-4 squats. Then let them cry. They need that. Let them boohoo a little while. And then when they're all done boohooing, then you go back and you hug them up. And you tell them, I love you. And I did not spank you to hurt you. I spanked you to help you. God gave you to me, and I'm going to be your parent. And when you do wrong, I'm going to spank you just like I did today. But it don't mean I don't love you. And you make sure that they know that you love them. And then you turn them loose. Okay, Jacob, you can go back. All right, so have an economy. Consistency. It's the key. Make sure you handle it properly. Be unified, husbands and wives, in discipline. Don't ever disagree in front of the kids. Mm-mm. They'll use it. And I think I've covered the gamut of discipline there. Anybody have any other questions about discipline while we're there? And let me say this. I dealt with teenagers last week. Let me say this to you about teenagers. Now, Jeremy's a teenager. I think he's the only one we got in here tonight. But some of you, you're going to have teenagers real soon. hopefully, by the time your child gets to be a teenager, you have instilled enough discipline in them and on them that you shouldn't have to spank a teenager. That's the truth of it. If you started when they're this big and you were consistent in your discipline, and unless they do something totally off the wall, you ought not to have to spank a teenager. They ought to be to the place where you can talk to them in an intelligent way and make sense with them. Okay? Well, it's rough. But that's where it should be. For a teenager to get a spanking is very, very, very embarrassing for a teenager. The little guys can shrug it off real easy. But it means a lot different to a teenager to get a spanking. So do what you need to do when they're this big, so when they get that big, you don't have to put them in that position. All right, that'll help them, that'll help you. Any questions or comments about discipline? I hope that helps you. All right, other questions? Anybody have any other questions about marriage, family, child raising? If you don't, I got a sermon ready. Fred. Told Angela she could get married when she was 29. We almost made it. Try to instill in your children that they don't need to get married as soon as they graduate high school. You know, bring them up with that frame of mind. That yes, you're going to get married one day, but you know, after high school you have college. And let me just say this. Each one of my kids knew when they graduated high school, I expected them to go to at least 1 year of Bible college. That was expected. After that 1 year, we would reevaluate if they didn't turn out to be college material, or if there was something else they really felt the Lord wanted them to do, then we would go that direction and readjust. But 1 year of Bible college. Now, there's a couple of things that helps you do. It helps you to give them direction after high school. You know, a lot of kids, you say, what are you going to do after high school? I don't know. What do you want to be? I don't know. Do you know anything? I don't know. Where if you instill that in your children, what are you going to do after high school? Well, I'm going to go to 1 year of Bible college. All right, they've already got that settled. And you would be amazed at what God can do in 1 year of Bible college. It gives God that opportunity to speak to them about the rest of their life. So I just instilled that in my children. All of you, I want at least 1 year of Bible college. And thank the Lord, none of them gave me a hassle. They said, okay, you know, that's cool. Yep, two graduated and Angie went 2 years. So now, that also instills in your children that you expect they're not going to get married right after high school. They're already spoken for. I got a year of college to go to. So instead of having this mindset that a lot of kids grow up with, I'm going to graduate high school and get married. They've already got in their mind, I'm going to graduate high school, go off to a year of college, and then we'll see. So it helps you to instill that in your children from this high. This is our plan. Now, at what age should you let them get married? It varies. There are some young people who are mature enough to be married, maybe at 20, 22, in that area. There are some of them are 39 and still not mature enough to be married. That's the truth of it. But by and large, I would encourage my kids, don't get married till at least 22. Because that's 4 years of college. And if they can go through 4 years of college, they've learned how to think. They've learned some character. They've stopped and thought about what they want for their life. You know, when a kid's 18, we don't know what we want for our life. We have no idea. And kids yoking up and getting married at 18. No wonder they're getting divorced at 20. They marry somebody at 18 and they've got 18-year-old ideas. But then all of a sudden they start to mature, and you know this guy at 18, he didn't care what he was or what he did. He gets to be 20, 21, 22 years old, and he starts to think, what do I want to do with the rest of my life? Well, then he decides he wants to go this direction. She decides she wants to go this direction. Now we got a divorce. Where if they've gone through some college and they've set a course for their life, they're looking for somebody who's going the same direction they're going. And so it will help them tremendously. I guess the truth is, put it off as long as you can. Won't hurt them. Amen? And no dating till they're 16. And girls, don't ever car date alone. Don't happen. You save yourself a lot of grief. Other questions? Have we answered everything? Tell me. No, we went over that. Double date under certain conditions. That I know the people you're double dating with. I know where you're going. I know what time you're going to be home. You're going there and coming here. You're not going somewhere else. Certain conditions, even on the double date. And that first one about, I know the people you're going with. That's real important. See, down there, and all Bible colleges have this problem with young people wanting to date. Down there at Trinity, they had a rule. If two young people wanted to go on a date, they had to have chaperones. They could go out on a date together, but they had to have a chaperone. And the chaperone had to be one of the girls from the dorm. So some girl would want to go out with a guy, and she'd say, the guy would say, well, can I take you out? She'd say, well, you know, we've got to get a chaperone. So she would find a girl, if this was the wrong kind of girl, she would find a girl that would be in cahoots with her, and they would take the chaperone, they'd go out on a date, they'd dump the chaperone somewhere, go do what they want to do, come back, pick up the chaperone, and come back. So even in the double dating thing, you know, sometimes young people get in cahoots with one another and they say, well, my mom and dad won't let me out unless we double date. So you come over, pick us up, take us and drop us off somewhere, and then you come back and get us later and everybody would be happy. So be careful about that. Make sure you know who. And parents, check up on your kids. You say, well, they're going to be upset. They're going to think I don't trust them. That's right. You don't trust them because they're kids. If you have any brains in your head, you won't trust them. Think about this. Hadn't been so long since you were a teenager. Oh. Yeah, some of you are looking that way. You know what I'm talking about. Your mom and dad trusted you. There we got a big surprise. They checked up on you. Mm-hmm. Check up on them. If they say we're going to so-and-so's house, call so-and-so. Hey, is my kid over there? If they say something's going on, stop by and see. If they're going to an activity somewhere at another church or something, check it out. Don't just take their word for stuff. Don't lie to you. Not my kid. Well, yours is perfect. Everybody else's will lie, though. Check up on them. That dating thing. Now, understand this. We got the wrong idea about dating. Somebody tell me the purpose of dating. Find a mate. A lot of people have the idea dating is just social life. The truth is, the purpose of dating is to find a mate. You're shopping. You're checking this one out and that one out to see if maybe it'll work. So that ought to tell you something about dating. You know, you ought to never date anybody you're not willing to marry. Now, some of you think back to your dating days and who you dated. You say, boy, you blew that one. But see, if there isn't a little bit of interest that this might be the one I'm going to marry, then don't date them. Parents, think about this. If your child never dates anybody that they don't have some kind of inkling they might want to marry them, then they're not ever going to marry the wrong one. Because they're going to keep looking until they find the right one. They've got the right idea about dating. The purpose of dating is ultimately to find the mate. To find that one that God has for you and that you blend with. So dating isn't just this big social life that our society makes it out to be. That's why 11-year-old girls are going out on dates. 11-year-old girl ain't old enough to get married. Not supposed to be anyway. Heard of one recently had a baby. But see, she shouldn't be dating. She's not ready to get married. So that brings us back to Fred's question. Well, how old should they be when they date? When they get married? Well, if they're not old enough to think about getting married, then they're not old enough to date. No reason for it. Amen, preacher. Yes, ma'am. Parents, don't be afraid to say to your children, you know, I don't think you need to hang around so-and-so. Now, listen to me. Don't run that person into the ground and don't give them 17 reasons why they're on drugs or drinking. No, just tell them, look, I'm your parent. I'm responsible to help you. And I think that person is just not good for you. And just let them know that that relationship isn't going to go. You know, Bobby's not good for you, so find another friend. And that'll be a help to your kids. The reason I say don't run them into the ground and give them 27 reasons, here's what happens. You go to your child, you say, Bobby's not good for you, he's on drugs, he's into pornography, he's this, he's that, and you list all these things. You're going to have Bobby's parents on your doorstep. And they're going to say, show me proof. And they're going to be really angry with you over that stuff. And if you don't have proof, you're in a bad place. Better you just tell your children, look, they're just not good for you. And leave it at that. The other thing is, how many of you know that kids have a big mouth? Over there when I taught at Trinity, we had a rule. And we told the kids, or the parents, we said, look, we won't believe anything your kids tell us about you if you don't believe anything they tell us that they tell you about us. Because kids, boy, they got mouths, boy, they run their mouth. And if you tell little Johnny that Bobby is no good for him because he's on drugs and all, he's going to go around and spread it all around the school. And tell everybody in the world what you said. Better not to do that. But just tell them, I'm responsible, I have to look out for you, and I can see this isn't a good relationship. We're just not going to do that. And, you know, as you keep that program going, when you say to them, hey, I don't think this is a good one for you to be hanging around, it gets to a place where they understand. I mean, there's no argument anymore, there's no dispute about it, they understand. Mom or dad just feel this way, so I got to move on. I mean, there were some people in our kids' lives, we just said, look, it's not going to be. And we didn't run them into the ground. We just said, we're responsible for you. You're our kids. And we want the best for you, so we're just not going to do that. Somebody else? Thank you. I don't have a problem with that. If the boy calls the girl.
Okay, but then, like, girls have a tendency to
I know. But wait a minute, they're calling your house.
I know.
Hello, is Nick there? No, if he wants to talk to you, he'll call you. You're the parent. You pay the phone bill. You say who talks on that phone, who don't. Parents, understand this. You are in control. The day you let your kids be in control, you have lost it. Hang it up. It's done. From the time my kids were this high to the time they left my house, and I had one of them at 26 and we had this discussion, they knew it was my house, they ate my food, they put their feet under my table, they slept under my sheets, and it was going to be by my rules. If they wanted to do something other than that, there's all kinds of apartments out there. Have at it. And that's just the way it has to be. And I'm not saying this to demean any of my kids, but one of my sons and I had that discussion at 26 years of age. You need to be in control. You are the parent. They may not like what you want. They may not agree with it. They may bellyache and moan and groan and accuse you of being the worst parent in the world and all kinds of stuff. But you just hold your ground. This is my cave. Mm-hmm. Who talks on my phone is regulated by me. What we watch on my television is regulated by me. What we hear on the radio in my house is regulated by me. What we read in my house is regulated by me. Well, who are you? I'm the guy that pays the bills. You don't like that? Get your own. You can do whatever you want in your house, but you're in my house.
I have to say that that is how we raise our children. And I'll be honest with you, I thought they would run away by the time they were 15 years old. But I'll have to say that they didn't run away, but we were happy to the guidelines, and we never had our kids run away from the police, and we never had a problem. You know, that he was strict. But I don't think it's the same harm. I think they have to run today.
You control the home. And let me just throw this at you. Sunday school teachers, same rule for your classroom. That is your classroom. You control the classroom. The day you let your students control your room, you lost it. I had junior high phys ed. I had 2 7th grade classes, 2 8th grade classes, 2 9th grade classes, and they threw some senior high kids in with them. And I had, I think, 3 classes of anywhere from 35 to 40 kids in each class. That's a lot of kids. Especially when you get out on a ball field. And they're running everywhere. We didn't have any problem. First week of school, I instilled in them, and they got the message real quick. That was my class. And things were going to be done my way, by my rules. And if you didn't like that, you were going to be in the office. You weren't going to be in phys ed the rest of the year. Because it was going to be my way. And that's how you need to be in your Sunday school class. That's how you need to be on your bus. This is my bus, my rules. You don't like it, you don't ride the bus. This stuff of letting the kids run the thing, it's pathetic. That's why our country's in such a mess. The inmates are running the institution. Take control. And the kids will respond to it. They may fight you at first, but they will respond to it when you show them, I mean business, and here's how it is. Tina. Good. I assumed you were talking about teenagers.
Well, I was talking about Nick, because Nicole's not allowed.
At Nicole's age, I don't think I'd be real comfortable with that. Yeah, she's too young for that. Now, I thought you were talking about Nick.
I was.
And at Nick's age, there's probably girls going to try to call him. That's the way it's done nowadays.
Yeah, I know.
But again, it's your phone. And don't play the game while I get my own phone. See, nobody installs a phone in my house without my permission. You want your own phone? Get your own apartment. Put it in. That's simple. You'd be amazed at how they change their mind, you know, when they start looking at, well, I got to buy my own food. I got to buy my own clothes. I got to get my own apartment. Whole different ball. Mom and Dad's place isn't so bad anymore. Even with the rules. Somebody else. Dale. I'm for it. But wait. I'm for it, but be careful. A teenager should be taught the responsibility of work, but be careful about the hours. Now, here's a pattern I've seen in parents. Parents are so brain dead, it's pathetic. Kid gets to be 16, 17 years old. All of a sudden, he wants his own car. And Dad says, well, I don't have money for that car. I'll get a job. Okay, if you get a job, you can have the car. Kid goes out, gets a job after school, working from maybe 4 o'clock till 10 or 11 o'clock at night, so he can buy this car. So now he has a job, and he's working all the time just so he can buy this car. He's not having the fun he's supposed to have as a teenager. He's working, and all his money's going into this stupid car, and this car's nothing but a bucket of bolts anyway, and his whole life is wrapped around that car. And he has to have the car to work, and he has to work to have the car. Don't get into that rat race. Now, I think young people should be taught to work. I told somebody the other day, in my senior year in high school, I worked every day after school. I paid for everything my senior year in high school. I paid for all the pictures, the ring, the announcements, everything. And I hate to say it, I went to the prom. I even paid for the prom. I paid for my own tux. I paid for my own cap and gown. My parents paid nothing. Worked every day after school. Didn't hurt me. Now, I kind of wish I didn't have to work all those hours, because I could have had some enjoyment of my teenage years. But it didn't hurt me. I am not, parents, listen to me, I am not for parents giving kids everything. Make them work for things. Teach them how to work for things and save up. Too many kids out there, they've never had to work for a thing. Graduate high school and never earned a dime. I can't imagine that. Yeah. Hold it. Parents. What was that next word? I thought I heard have to. This operates at my discretion. My name don't get signed unless I say it gets signed. I didn't buy any of my kids a car. I loaned Billy one of mine one time, got it back. And I have to say, you know, my dad taught me something. He said, you want to drive? You buy a car and you pay for the insurance. Yeah. You know what that taught me? Taught me to take care of that car. You know, a lot of guys, when I was in school, their dad would buy them a car, and they'd be squealing tires all over town, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Man, they were always blowing up engines and tires. They'd have to get new tires every 2 weeks and all that kind of mess. It didn't happen to me. Because if I blew the engine up, I had to pay for it. Daddy wasn't going to fix it. If I wore the tires out, I had to put tires on it. Daddy wasn't going to pay for it. It taught me to respect what I had. This stuff about kids having new cars. Parents, think about this. Our young people today get married, And the day they get married, they expect to leave the wedding ceremony and go to their condo and unlock the door and walk in and have all the furniture and all the appliances and the bedroom furniture and everything in place. The microwave, the color TV, the stereo, the VCR, the CD player. All of it has to be the washer, dryer, all of it. Wall to wall. How it was when we got married. Now, we have a nice home. Many of you have been there. We have a beautiful home. We have appliances. We have things. But it's taken us a few years to get them. But see, young people today don't want to wait. They got to have everything as soon as they're married. Here's their problem. They expect to have a home and everything mom and dad had when they left home. They expect to have all that that mom and dad had to work 25 or 30 years to get. They expect to have it the day they're married. That's why they're in such credit trouble. Now, they don't need all that. And the truth is, some of you have been where my wife and I have been, half the fun of marriage is getting there. You know, we thought it was a big deal. We bought a wash machine. We had to buy it on credit. But we had to wash diapers. Man, it was a big day. We got a new wash machine. Wow! We paid that off a few years later. We got a refrigerator. And it belonged to us. Nobody could take it. It wasn't a loaner. It wasn't somebody's junk. That was a big thing to us. But now, kids today, they got to have everything. Like Jim said, they want a new car. They don't want just a car. They got to have a new car. It's got to be a sport utility vehicle or a sports car. Man, I rejoice that my dad would give me permission to buy anything with four wheels on it. I even bought a Ford one time. I was desperate. I got rid of it and got a good car. She's stealing my thunder. I was getting there. But that's exactly right. I said, be careful of the hours. Your children should never be allowed to work during church. They come home and say, I got a job, but I got to work Sunday morning. You don't have a job. Oh, you're just a big meanie. Okay, I'm a meanie, but you don't have a job. You're going to be in church on Sunday morning. You're going to be in church Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. That's church. Don't even come home and tell me you got a job that's going to take you out of church. And if there's a youth group and youth activities, you need to be free to go to them. You need to help your kids with that. Yes, it's good for them to work, but don't make working the priority. Listen, they have their whole life to work. They only have a couple of years to be a teenager. That youth group's going somewhere or doing something. In a couple of weeks, Jeremy's going to Florida. He's going down to Trinity Youth Conference. I envy him. He's going to have a great time, and I think that's the best thing Jeremy could be doing. Now, if he had a job, and he said, well, I can't go because of my job, I said, quit your job. Get another one when you come back. Sandra. Well, when your child's working, and again, if you're going to let your young person work, then the idea of their working is for you to help them to learn how to work, how to save, how to buy. It's not just to get money. And, you know, when young people, and they work, they get their money, and I understand the mentality, this is mine, I can do whatever I want with it. Well, no, that's not true. See, help your child and make them understand, okay, if you're going to work, you're going to have a job. When you get paid, I want 25% of your paycheck in a savings account. Somebody say amen. Just a minute. They don't have to buy food. They don't have to buy clothes. You're supplying all their needs. 25% in the savings account is nothing. So minimum, 25%. 10% goes in the tithe. Mm-hmm. You're going to work, you're going to earn, you're going to tithe. That's God's. So there's 35% of their money. And, of course, Uncle Sam's going to take 20%. So there's 55% of what they earn. Now, with the rest of it, they can make purchases. All purchases got to be cleared. You know, they have to learn the respect of mom and dad. I want to buy this. Mom and dad, I want to buy that. Is it okay? They need to understand. They need to ask your permission. And again, that comes from here. Is it okay if I buy this? Is it okay if I buy that? You know, my kids knew not to bring the wrong kind of clothes home. I had one of them come home with the wrong haircut one time. Yeah, I sent him down to the barbershop. I had a lady barber down at the end of our street in Jacksonville. And Carol did a tremendous job cutting hair. I mean, she was good at it. And I sent my boys down there, and I told her before the boys ever went, I said, now when my boys come in here, they get a Trinity cut. Tapered on the sides, tapered in the back. Nothing wild. She said, okay. One day, Billy walked in, and he had other than a Trinity cut. I said, who cut your hair? I was down at Carol's. I said, Carol didn't cut that. Well, she wasn't there. The other lady cut it. I said, stay right there. I went and got the phone, called up. It's Carol. Billy was just in there. Yeah, I saw him. All right, I saw him in here. She talked. I said, he got the wrong haircut. She said, he did. I said, yep. She said, just send it back. I said, I will. So you get back here and get your haircut. If they brought in the wrong clothes, I would have told them, get that back to the store. You don't wear that. You live here. See, we're back to whose house is it? Well, it's my money. Okay, take your money and live somewhere else. It's that simple. You know what the problem with most parents is? They're afraid of their kids. They're afraid. What if he does? What if he does? See, you're looking at the wrong side of it. What if he does? Well, let me ask you this. What if he doesn't, and you acquiesce to him, now you've got a kid in your house that you cannot control? See, I was counseling some parents here years ago when I first got here. They were having trouble with one of their teenagers. And some things were going on, and I looked at that dad eyeball to eyeball, and I said, I'm going to tell you what I think you should do. I'm going to tell you as your pastor. You ain't going to like it, but here's what you need to do. You need to send your daughter to a girl's home. Huh. He said, I can't do that. I talked to the girl alone, and I said, well, let me tell you. You're going to regret if you don't, because you have a young person in your house who's made up her mind. She is not going to listen to you. Now, maybe you can live with that, but I couldn't. I couldn't. I could not live with a young person in my house who said, I will not abide by your rules. You don't abide by my rules, then you got to live somewhere else. You know, that's what you want. Now, that's hard, but that's the way it has to be. See, James Dobson wrote that book, Tough Love. And love sometimes has to be tough. And you know, some of you are sitting here nodding your head. Your parents did exactly those things to you. And it didn't hurt you. Matter of fact, knocked some sense into you. Woke you up a little bit. Somebody else. Questions, comments?
When they have a job now, if they're over 18, and you feel that the job comes to you and say, I'm going to buy this, and you think about that?
There's some latitude allowed there. For instance, you know, if they want to go to McDonald's and get a Big Mac, they don't have to ask permission. If they want to buy a shirt, they already know my standards, so they don't have to come say, do you think it's okay? When they're 14, 15 and have a job, they need to ask you. When they get to be 18 and 19, they should have enough sense that you can trust them a little bit. But any major purchase, absolutely, got to ask you. Anything of any real importance. You're the parent. What do you think? You know, they want to buy a $250 or $300 stereo. No. That comes through me. And their car will not have a boom box in the back, you know, the boom, 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 boom. No, we don't do that. Sandra? The what? Haircut? But he knew. See? Let me tell you something. I was 18 years old going to college. I got a job at the steel mill for the summer. I worked swing shift. One week I would work days. Next week I worked afternoons. Next week I would work middays. And many days I worked double shifts trying to earn money for the next semester of college. And my dad had a rule, if I wasn't working and I was on a date, I had to be home at 11 o'clock. Now, we had a go-around about it. I was dating my wife, and I didn't want to be home at 11 o'clock, and I told my dad, I said, I work all night. I work 16 hours. I'm gone for days at a time. You don't know where I am, other than at work. His response was, this is my house, 11 o'clock's curfew time, you will be in. I said, no, I won't. He took my car keys. I moved out. I was back in a week. Sometimes you got to call your kids bluff. I mean, I remember as a kid, and some of you pulled the same trick. Well, I'm going to run away. Pack all your stuff. We used to pack it up in a handkerchief, you know, like the hobos used to. Put it on a stick. We'd gather all our stuff in a little handkerchief or something. Well, I'm going to run away. My mom said, okay, we'll see you later. That wasn't what I was looking for. I was looking for her to boo-hoo, don't go, don't go. She said, oh, I'll see you later. Your brothers want your bed anyway. Irene. Well, that's a point, too. You know, when they want to go, you go the way it came. That's my computer. That's my bed. That's my... Yeah. Yeah. Help yourself. Somebody else.
You were just making a point.
I wasn't fighting her battles. I was fighting my battles. Somebody else? No questions on marriage? Can we solve all the marital problems?
Amen.
Murder, yeah, that'll work. Any other questions?
My husband wisely when they got married. I advised them that if friends should hang around, they should grow any closer to God, then they don't need to be friends.
Well, that's in any of their friendships. If the friends that they're picking aren't helping them and making them better people, then they don't need them for friends. How many of you remember Eddie Haskell? Your kids don't need to hang around with Eddie Haskell. It's not going to help them. If that person isn't going to be a plus in their life, then they need to hang around with somebody else. Read Proverbs about who hangs around with who. Mm-hmm. Hang around with wise men, you'll be kind of wise. Hang around with fools, you'll be kind of as a fool. So, and I believe it's in Corinthians, Paul says, evil communications corrupt good manners. And what he means by that is, and if you look at it and study it out, you'll find out what he's saying is, that evil friends will corrupt the right kind of upbringing. Who your kids hang around with is very important. Peer pressure is, it's a very powerful force with teenagers. Peer pressure. You ever see these kids with the baggies? How many understand? What would make a kid want to wear a pair of pants so big that it hangs down almost off of his body and the crotch is down around his knees, he can't even walk? What makes him want to do that? Peer pressure. As uncomfortable as it might be, as stupid as it looks, peer pressure, they got to be cool. Peer pressure makes kids do crazy things. Somebody else, question, comment. Child rearing, marriage. Sandra. Be by yourself. Got to find your leverage. You know, as trained as a mechanic, one of the things I learned was leverage. You can do a lot of stuff with leverage. You just got to know where to put the pressure. And leverage is important with your kids. Let me throw this at you. One of the things, there was never an option when I grew up, was graduating high school. It was a rule in our house, you would graduate high school. Unless you were 6 feet under. And if you tried not to graduate high school, you probably would be 6 feet under. But everybody in the house would graduate high school. So it was never a question of, you know, I'm going to sign myself out. You know what I'm talking about? See, nowadays a big thing with kids, and parents are afraid, oh, he's going to sign himself out of school. Well, if you got a rule, everybody graduates high school, and he signs himself out of school, where's he going to live? Non-graduates don't live in my house. They either go to school or they go find their own place. Now you quit school, hey, you just made your decision. Where are you living tomorrow? Safe Harbor's got open beds. You wouldn't. Oh, yes, I would. That's what it came to. Dale.
Consistency. I mean, some of my experience, consistency still. safe Christians, being around unsafe grandparents, trying to be a good example, yet trying to keep kids in line, yet trying not to be too, because they will, the first thing they do is they'll look at you and see how you're going to react, because they realize that the kids are having a free-for-all, and they're going to watch and see how you react. Is there any things that you can give that might, like, take them out of the room, or
There's several things there. Number one, you're dealing with people that you love and that love your children. Always remember that. People you love and they love your children. Now, your parents need to respect you. You've got to bring your parents to the place where they respect you. And there's ways you can do that subtly. You know, for instance, if you discipline your child and they disagree with that openly, you need to get them aside. Don't do it in front of the kids, but you need to get them aside. And in a very nice tone, say, look, you know, you raise your kids, and I'm sure you did it your way. Now, we have our kids, and we're going to raise them our way. And I don't appreciate what you did, and I just ask you to don't do that again. Use a nice tone. Try not to be confrontational. Do your best to disarm situations so you're not confrontational, but be firm in your stand. And let them know in a nice way, and this can be difficult, but let them know in a nice way, if you persist in undermining me, you aren't going to see those kids. Now, don't say it that way, but let them know. These are my kids. I'm going to bring them up the way I believe I should. And if you keep causing problems, then I just can't bring them here. Do it in a subtle way. Now, when you're there, give a certain amount of liberty. Give it in places where you can. There are places where, you know, you can just let it be. It's okay. It's not anything non-scriptural. You give in those places. But when it gets to important scriptural matters, matters where you need to put your foot down, then you put your foot down. And you use what you did in letting them have the freedom. You say, look, you know, I didn't object over here, but over here, we don't do that. And after a while, they get the idea. Now, you're relatively new Christians. Your family, this is all new to them. And it's going to take you a few years till they get used to it. They're never going to like it. Unless they get saved, they're never going to like it. It takes them a few years to get used to it. But once they get used to it, then normally they'll be more cooperative with you. But approach it from a point of love. Try your best to disarm situations. Don't try to be confrontational with them and get in their face and say, bless God, these are my kids, I don't mind. You're only going to make problems. Be very subtle about it, but very direct and very firm. And remember how I said lower your voice? You're not excited. You're not angry. Here's how it is. And, you know, we just need your cooperation. We love you. We want to be here. We want to be able to bring the kids here and be comfortable. And you make it hard when you do things like that. So please don't do that. And most of the time, you'll get a good response. They may not like it. Most of the time, they'll get a good response. Does that help you? I hope. Somebody else. Fred. No, you got to watch the kids and see. Art, when Art was all from the time he was 5 years old, 4 years old, until he graduated, because we moved, till we moved from Fairless Hills, his best friend was an unsaved kid, Carpenter, lived up the street. Now, the boy's parents were pretty straight, I mean, as far as morals and things, and they knew where we stood, and it wasn't a problem. But out of all the kids around, that he was probably his best friend. And of course, Chris, that was the kid's name, he knew the limits of our house, what the rules of our house were. And here's a good tip for you. Encourage your kids to bring their friends to your house. because you control the turf. See, when they're at somebody else's house, you don't know what's going on. When they're at your house, then you know what music they're listening to, what television shows they're watching, what books they're reading. You know what's going on. So encourage and try to make it that your kids enjoy bringing their friends to your house. And our kids are always bringing people home. Try to encourage that. All right? And I think that'll help you. Watch individuals. Don't just say, you know, well, he's saved, that's fine. Man, you'd be sorry. You know, a lot of people claim to be saved, live like the devil. Don't go by that, and don't think because you got your kid in a Christian school, he's only going to have good friends. No. Your job's the parent, man. Be on duty all the time. Just watch them. Watch them. And help them. Somebody else? Question? Comment? Nothing that I can hand out. If, I almost hate to advocate him, but Larry Burkett, if you have problems with finances, he has a lot of literature you can get. And in most cases, he's pretty straight on finances. Now, I never heard him say this. Somebody told me that he had made the statement that if you're behind in your bills, that you ought to pay your bills before you pay your tithe. I don't agree a minute with that. Well, that's wrong. See, your tithe belongs to God. And if you take your tithe to pay somebody else, you just rob God to pay somebody else. See, so I disagree with that. But most of his principles and things are good, and he has a lot of material he can put in your hands to try to help you. I would encourage you, and I dealt with finances, have a budget. Husbands and wives, know what's going on financially. The two of you, you know, don't be the Lone Ranger on either side. That don't work too well. And by the way, if you're not unified in finances, then there's something wrong with your marriage. You don't have my money and your money. We have our money. Nod your head or do something. That stuff of, you know, this is mine and this is... No. You got married, you're one. It all goes in that common fund, and you pay the bills out of the common fund because you're one. And you don't play games with one another and hide things. That creates distrust. You sit down, you look at the bills. If you're in a financial mess, you throw them up in the air together, you know. Whichever ones land in a circle, you pay, but you do it together. So that he knows and she knows. And you know, here's what happens. You get in a financial mess a lot of times, and I've seen this over and over. The husband don't want to deal with it, so he throws the checkbook at the wife. He says, pay the bills. And bless her heart, she's trying to pay the bills, and she's in all this turmoil and stuff. And then he comes home and hears late notices and people calling, and he's on her case. Well, shame on him. If he'd sit down with her and help her throw the things up in the air and figure out who's going to get paid, then he'd know why they didn't get paid. Save you a lot of fights. By the way, a good fight's good once in a while. Mm-hmm. Now, don't get physical about it, but you know, because then you get to make up. Amen. Somebody else. If he's happy with that and he's not going to fuss at you and accuse you of spending the money wrong and all that, hey, have at it. I said when I dealt with finances, the one who's best able ought to do it. I believe that with all my heart. And that's not a, you know, I've had guys say, well, bless God, my wife never run a checkbook. And she's probably home wishing she could because you ain't doing such a good job. But, you know, this whole fundamentalist thing, well, you know, husband's got to be the head of everything. Well, you fool, you can still be the head of the finances. It's just that she works with you. And you decide together, you know, we're going to pay this, we're going to pay this, here's how we're going to do this, here's how we're going to do that. And that's not her usurping your authority. You understand that? It's, in essence, she's working for you because you're a team. And ultimately, you make the decisions. Yes, ultimately, you're the man. But you work together on the thing. And it will help you. See, then you're in the mess together. Then you're broke together. A lot of consolation in that. Fred. Depends what he wants to do. If he wants to study something that he can get at a Christian university, I'd say no, go to Christian school. If he wants to go to Penn State for something he can only get at Penn State, then what are you going to do? Sometimes, and this, I'm not saying this across the board, but there's sometimes when the best things your kid can do is go someplace like that. Get a test of faith. Go through the fire a little bit and be able to stand for what he believes. I have a friend who just got a doctor's degree from Penn State. He's a preacher. Lives up near the campus. Went to school at night and got a doctor's degree from him. Hadn't changed what he believes. So as parents, you have to weigh that out. You know, there's some things you just can't get in a Christian college. So you have to go where you can. Yeah, why didn't you go to Christian college for that, huh? Now, I advocate Christian school, but I got to tell you this. There are, and don't take this wrong, but understand what I say, and don't go out of here and misquote me. I get in enough trouble for what I say. Don't. Say I said something I didn't say. But this sounds crazy, but there are some supposedly Christian schools that I would prefer a student go to a secular school rather than that so-called Christian school. Because at least at the secular school, you know what to look out for. You're on your guard. You know they're going to be wrong and they're going to be humanistic and all that stuff. At that so-called Christian school, it's kind of very hidden. Very subtle. And so sometimes, you're better off being in a place like that. We had a lot of the young people at Trinity graduated. If they weren't going into the ministry somewhere or something like that, many of them would go to Florida Junior College because it was local, it was inexpensive, etc. You know, they didn't turn reprobate. If you instill in your kids what they believe and why they believe it, they ought to be able to handle themselves. No university should be able to shake them. Mm-hmm. And see, that comes from home. Somebody else. Not much time left. Two. I don't have any problem with them as long as they're not doing unscriptural things. And they don't interfere with church or activities of the church. It's hard to find any of those kind of activities anymore that don't interfere with church or don't violate what you believe. For instance, Girl Scouts. You know, they're teaching some things we don't believe. And they're taking some stands we don't agree with. Boy Scouts. There were some things with the Boy Scouts that caused most of the fundamental churches to back away from them and form their own groups of similar but not the same. I think when he was 6 or 7, Art played T-ball one year, and he had a good time with it, but the next year our church had a T-ball league, so he went there. But I don't have a problem with it. Again, as long as it don't interfere with church, as long as it's nothing unscriptural, it's good for them to be involved in things. Somebody else? Cameron. In this area, I honestly can't. because the football leagues play on Sunday. The wrestling teams wrestle on Sunday. The Little League, the problem with Little League is not the teams, it's the parents. You know, there's so much cussing and fighting and stuff goes on at Little League games, I don't even know why the world wants to be involved. I just heard of a place in Florida, and this was unique. They called all the parents together, they met with all the parents, and they said this. They said, now, we have a new rule. If you want your children to be involved in our athletic association, you have to be willing to sign this contract. And the contract said something like this. I understand that this is just recreational sports. And I promise I will not badmouth umpires. I will not badmouth coaches. I will not cuss at people on the field. I won't yell at my kid. And they had a whole list of things you couldn't do. And if people wanted their children to play, they had to sign those. See, I knew a case here a couple years ago where a guy actually got shot for being an umpire. See, it's not the kids, it's the parents. And so that kind of an atmosphere would make me want to shy away from Little League and that kind of stuff. And that's why in this area there's not a whole lot to offer the kids who want to be involved with the Lord. Because most of them are on Sunday, most of them are on Wednesday night, and many of them have a lot of worldliness to them. The answer, Faith Baptist has the answer, they have intramural sports. They have enough people, they do it themselves. And it all revolves around church. But unfortunately, we don't have enough people for that. Somebody else? Know everything you need to know now? All right, Amanda. One question. Yep. What was your question? Nice and loud. You said it was about the rapture. Don't remember? Okay, we'll do it another day then. Yeah. When I asked her out, unfortunately, I didn't have to deal with her dad when I asked her out. I should have, but I didn't. Let me tell you a story. We were at Trinity, and there was this fellow named Mike Bliss. He was the running back on the football team. He played baseball, very athletic, good-looking young guy. And he wasn't huge, but he was very muscular, very strong, and very macho. Mike was just macho about everything. Well, he decided he wanted to take my daughter out. And Angie told him, you have to ask my dad. So Macho Mike came over the house one night, and he was going to ask me if Angie and him and another couple could go somewhere with the school or whatever. So I was out in my study doing my work out there for college, and I didn't even know he was in the house. You know, they were, my wife and all of them were in the living room. And after a while, here comes Mike out. My wife says, Mike wants to talk to you. So I said, tell him, come out. So he comes out. Boy, he was nervous as a cat on a tin roof, man. He was pacing. He was sweating. I thought, what's the matter with this kid? And he was back and forth. How you doing, Mr. Gilmore? You know, nice books. And he's trying to make conversation in his macho way. And he just paced and he sweated. And finally, he got up the courage. He said, would it be all right? I'd like to take your daughter out. And I looked at him. And boy, he about slinked out of that room. I said, where are you going? And I grilled him. And I finally said, well, I guess it'd be all right. He went out there. Oh. But they told me for about an hour beforehand, he was out there doing the same thing, sweating. I got to go in there and talk to him. No, I'll wait a while. Like that. But I think if a young man wants to take out a young lady, he needs to go see her daddy. Yeah. I like what Bob Hamlin did. He told me about when his son-in-law was, I don't know if he was here or not, his son-in-law was a preacher. But when he wanted to marry Bob's daughter, Brother Hamlin knew he was coming to ask him. And so when he came over, Brother Hamlin was in his office there, and he had a handgun. And he took that handgun out and laid it on the desk. And that boy came in and he said, "What do you want?" And that boy looked at that gun and he thought, "Oh." He said it took him the longest time to get that question out. But I think, yes, absolutely should ask Dad. And I think never beep the horn and her go out to the car. Always come in and get her. Amen. And again, know where they're going, what time they're going to be home, all the rules. Keep them. Somebody else. Yeah, we had that conversation. Oh, it's a little bit enjoyable. Especially when you're ornery. You just like to see him sweat. Anybody else? Questions, comments? Children, marriage, family? Absolutely. Yep. We had, most of you know the Dawsons. Hold your hand up, you know the Dawsons. Okay. Chris Ann, she was formerly Chris Ann Baker, was from Faith Baptist in Fairless Hills. We knew her when she was a little girl, watched her grow up. She came to Trinity when I was leaving Trinity. She had been there about a year, I guess, maybe 2 years, and we moved to North Carolina. She finished Trinity, and they took her on staff there as a teacher. She was an English teacher in high school for 2 years. While she was there, they had a missions conference, and she surrendered her life to go to Zaire, Africa, to be a missionary. So, as a missionary, of course, you got to go on deputation and things and try to raise support. And so at the end of that school year, she began that process. And she talked to Dr. Gray about it. She said, "You know, I have to go out and try to raise support on the weekends at different churches. I'd like to stay here and teach, but I'd have to be gone on weekends." And Dr. Gray was very stern about that. He said, "No, you can't do that. You'll have to resign your teaching position." So she did. And so she ended up coming to teach for us in Gastonia. And I allowed her that liberty of when she had to go, she could go. She was a great teacher. When she first came to us, she was still unmarried, 26 years old, I believe she was. And people used to say things to her about not being married. And she said, "Well, I'm going to Zaire, and I got to find a guy going to Zaire." And we used to kid with her about Mr. Perfect. And she would tell us, "Well, he's going to be 6'2". He's going to have black hair, dark eyes." She said, "I don't want any blonde hair, blue eye guy." Remember? She said, "I want a nice tall one with black hair, brown eyes." Well, after about, I guess, a year and a half being with us, she went over to this mission board over in Greensboro because they had some people going to Zaire. And they had a young fellow that they wanted her to meet. And she went over there that weekend, and she had been talking to this guy on the phone. Now, he was at Northeast Baptist School of Theology, night school student. She had been talking to him on the phone because he was going to Zaire, and somebody had hooked him up. Well, he went to Greensboro, North Carolina, and she drove over there. And she came back from that weekend, and she walked in, and I thought, uh-oh. I could tell by the look on her face. I said, "It's him, isn't it?" "Yeah." I said, "What's he look like?" She said, "Well, he's about this tall. He's blonde hair and blue eyes." She said, "But he's going to Zaire." And she had been praying that God would give her a husband going to Zaire, Africa. And God honored that prayer. And she would not date anyone who wasn't going to Zaire, Africa. And I asked her one time, I said, "How come you won't date anybody that's not going to Zaire?" She said, "Well, I'm going to Zaire. Why should I date anybody that's not?" I said, "I just wanted to ask her." But she was so purposed in her heart. And watch this, because here's the thing. The devil's no fool. And if he can keep you from doing what you know God wants you to do by giving you a mate that's against what you want to do, he'll throw that mate at you. So you just got to be purposed in your heart. This is what God wants me to do, and I'm not going to let anything interfere with it. And then protect it. So she's made that decision. She ought never to date anybody who's not going to be a preacher. But she shouldn't date anybody who's not going to be a preacher. Requirement. I made a decision a long time ago. I'm going to marry a preacher. You want to be a preacher? You might get a lot of guys called into the ministry, Danielle. I surrender today. I want to date Danielle. Yeah. I'd be real concerned. I'd watch.
I mean, we talked about protecting the daughter, but we didn't talk much about watching out for your son, didn't we?
Well, again, we're parents, we're on duty all the time. And if your son came home and you said, well, what'd you think of her dad? Well, I didn't meet him. Well, prayers in the morning. I'm going to Northeast Baptist School of Theology, preach chapel. That's always a privilege and a joy. But just pray that God will give me the message, the right message, and use me to be a help to those students. Well, I said I would answer questions tonight, and so let me begin with that. If you don't have questions, then we'll do some other things. I did get one question in the offering plate, so let me deal with that one first. And the question was, what would you consider a good means of discipline and the sorts of offenses each kind of discipline warrants? Well, I think the Bible gives us a good start on discipline when it talks about using the rod. Amen, preacher. We live in a society in America where the bleeding hearts, the humanists, the feminists, the queer crowd, the whole liberal side of our country has come out and said it's wrong to corporally punish your children. They come through with the psychological arguments that hitting only genders more hitting and violence only genders more violence. That is a bunch of junk. How many of you were spanked as children? You don't look like too violent a bunch to me. Now, we are Bible believers, and God says there's a time to use the rod on your children. So we use that as our starting position on discipline. Now, parents, listen to me. You better design a system of discipline for your children. Hit and miss discipline don't work. And turning your head and not noticing things don't work. You've got to discipline your children, and you've got to have a schedule of discipline in your heart and in your mind, and the husband and the wife have to agree on discipline. Now, when I say a schedule, and you might use the word economy of discipline. Let me tell you a story. I was out with, and I'll tell you his name because you don't know him, Brother Paul Andrews, who was the youth pastor at Trinity. And we were out visiting one day, and I was soul winning with him. And he was telling me he had three children. He had his oldest daughter, Deborah. He had a son named Timothy. And he had his youngest daughter named Ashley. Now, Deborah was little Miss Lady. You know, she's very feminine, very ladylike. Little Ashley was a terror. I mean, she was just mean as a snake. And Timothy, in between, he was a whiner. And he just, I don't know what his problem was, and Brother Paul tried to deal with him over this thing. And he was telling me this day, he said, you know, he said, I had such a time with Timothy yesterday, he said, I must have spanked him a dozen times. And that kind of hit me, you know, kind of crosswise. I couldn't ever remember a day where I spanked my kids a dozen times. And I said, well, man, what in the world was going on? And he shared some things with me about he just didn't seem to be able to get Timothy's attention and all. And I said, well, you know, Brother Paul, I said, you need to be careful. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, you need to have an economy in your discipline. And you can't spank your kids for every offense. You with me? See, if you spank your child for picking his nose, then what do you do when he kills somebody? You've got to have an economy. Certain things gender certain responses. And your children ought to have a pretty good idea what kind of response you're going to give them. Now, there are many tools for discipline. Parents, listen to me. There are many tools for discipline. Don't limit yourself. Get a big arsenal. Find what you can use. There's time out. There's taking away privileges. There are giving rewards. The reward and taking away system, you know, of motivating your children. There's assignments that you can do with writing. There's just so many things you can do. Assigning chores. When I worked at Trinity Christian Academy, I was in the junior high building, and the principal I worked for was Dr. Clay Lindstam. Dr. Lindstam had an earned doctorate in education, and he was just a practical guy. And I watched him with those kids, and I watched how he disciplined them. Boy, he just knew how to do it. And he knew how to do it in love. And my son Billy and he got to know each other real well in Bill's seventh grade year. I'd say probably the last week of September, I had a phone call from Brother Lindstam, as a parent now, when Bill went into the seventh grade. Brother Lindstam, he kind of talked like this, you know, Brother Gilmore, I'm having a problem with your son Bill. I said, what's the problem? He said, well, Brother Gilmore, he seems to end up in my office an awful lot, you know, and I'm having to deal with him. I said, Brother Lindstam, I'm sorry to hear that you're having a problem with him. But here's what I think we ought to do, Brother Lindstam. I said, you got him 6 hours a day, I got him the rest of the day. If he gives you any problem, you wear him out. And if he gives me any problem, I'll wear him out. He said, well, Brother Gilmore, if that's how you feel, I'll certainly do it. That was the best thing I ever did for Billy. After about a week of getting wore out once a day, and I mean they used the paddle. Brother Lindstam had those boys come in there. He'd say, all right, hands on the desk. And they'd have to lean on the desk. And he just, whoosh, a few smacks. Got Bill's attention. But I noticed that wasn't all he used. He used different. I saw one day I was watching. We had an eighth grade boy. It was a real handful. And it was just after lunch. You know, Florida gets hot. It was after lunch on a fall afternoon. And I see this boy out there on our grounds, and he's walking the fence picking up papers and trash and all afternoon. I say, hey, Brother Lindstam, doesn't that boy have any classes? He said, he's mine for today. He's mine. He said, I'm teaching him some lessons here. Another day I saw some boys had to stay after school. I saw them pushing the big old trash cans that they used in the lunchroom. You know how nasty they get? Well, they had the privilege of washing those big old trash cans that day. I'll guarantee you, Dr. Lindstam knew how to get those kids' attention. See? So parents, number one, make an economy, and I'll get back to that. Number two, find what works with your child. Every kid is different. We had three children. Art wasn't too bad. I mean, every once in a while I'd have to talk to him, you know, and slap him around a little bit or kick him or something or get the lead pipe and wrap him once or twice. But Art wasn't too bad. Never had too much of a problem with Arthur. Angela, I'll get back to in a minute, but Bill about wore us out. I spanked Bill more than I spanked the other two combined. Now, I found out I had to deal with Bill one way, Angela one way, and Art one way. I had to learn my kids and know how to handle them. You see, with Angela, hardly ever had to spank her. All I ever had to do as her daddy was look at her with a certain look and a tone of voice, and she melted. I mean, it was over. It was as if I had spanked her. It wouldn't work on Bill, though. Learn your children. And if you have a child now with Angela, I could have very easily broke her had I insisted on spanking and going too far with the discipline. She didn't need it. See? So don't overdo. But find out what's worked. What works. Some parents have told me, I spank my child. It just don't work. All right? Find out what does work. You've got to get the leverage. Work, experiment, deal with your child until you find something that gives you the leverage you need. Learn your children. Be consistent in your discipline. You know, you can't make something wrong today and let them get away with it tomorrow. And I find a lot of parents nowadays are having that problem. Sometimes parents will get around other adults and their children will do something and they punish them and they say it's wrong, but any other time that kid could have done that and got away with it. What you did was you just punished your child for your embarrassment. Hello? See, if that's how you discipline, because you got embarrassed because what your child did, you disciplined them. You're not disciplining for their good. You're disciplining because you're angry at them, because you're embarrassed. That's wrong. Your discipline needs to be consistent. If it's wrong today, it's wrong tomorrow, it's going to be wrong next week, it's going to be wrong when you're 16 years old. Consistent. And I found out a long time ago, one of your greatest friends in discipline is consistency. Over and over and over and over. And pretty soon it registers with them. It might take 2 or 3 weeks. It might take a couple of months till they finally get the message. Consistency. If something is a spanking offense today, then it's a spanking offense tomorrow. And it'll be a spanking offense next week. I've been in the grocery store. This drives me crazy. Get in that grocery store and some mother say, I already told you 4 times, and if I have to tell you again, you already spoke 3 times too many. Take care of business. Children need discipline. They need somebody to set up the rules. They need somebody to say, here are the limits. If you go beyond them, there's a price to pay. And you help your children when you discipline them. You are doing them a favor, believe it or not, when you discipline them. You're helping them develop character. You're helping them develop self-discipline. You're helping them to understand there are limits and lines that I do not step over. Why do you think we have the crime problem in America that we have? Because parents don't discipline children. We have a Dr. Spock generation where children grew up doing whatever they wanted to do. And they get out into society and they think, well, that's the way it is. I can do whatever I want to do. And pretty soon they find themselves in jail. They can't keep a job because their boss isn't going to put up with their junk. Yeah, you might be able to do what you want to do at home, but when you get in the workplace, you're not going to do what you want to do. How many of you want your children to be successful? Can you imagine an executive, a CEO of a corporation, who has no discipline and no character? I don't think so. We have to discipline our children. We have to set up an economy. And by that I'm saying, you need to make up in your mind, you and your husband, what kind of offenses are spanking offenses, what kind of offenses are privilege taking away offenses, what kind of offenses are timeout offenses, and stick to those. your children, you know, when they're old enough to understand restoration and retribution and those kind of things. If they steal something, you need to make them pay it back. If they break something, you need to help them to replace it so that they learn those principles. I am responsible. Discipline can be a difficult thing, but it's something as parents we're called on to do, and we must do. And we must strive to do a good job with it. Because God says that's our responsibility. Now, never discipline your children in anger. We used to have a man come here, and he came real close to getting the preacher in his face on several occasions because I personally saw him take his foot and kick his little boy. Boom. Just like that. And it was out of anger. And it wasn't one time. And I knew if he did that here, I couldn't imagine what he did at home. You don't discipline children in anger. For one thing, that teaches your children that they can push your buttons. You need to strive to make sure you don't let your kids know they pushed your buttons. As much as lieth within you, when you deal with them, you try to be as cool and calm and collected as you can be. If they think they can rattle your cage, they will. If you're upset, if you're angry, if they've done something that sets you off, you're like a bottle rocket man and you're shooting skyward, don't discipline. Go somewhere, cool down, drink some tea, take a walk, dunk a donut, whatever you need to do, till you're collected again. And then you get that child and you very calmly. Now, here's the problem. Always explain what they did. Make sure they understand the offense. You know, and I'm not criticizing my parents. They did the best they could with me. I thank God for them. But, you know, sometimes I got lickings and I got the belt. I didn't even know why. Your child ought to understand why, what they did wrong. Then you spank him, and I need a volunteer. Jake, you want to come here? Jacob's going to help me. He don't mind if we spank him, does he? You don't mind us spanking in front of everybody, do you? I'm just kidding you. We wouldn't do that. You need to learn how to spank your children. Now, God gave us a place to spank children. God built it. It's right back here. Padded well. Not really anything you can hurt, so to speak. But it's interesting that God connected it to here. You know how I know that? Because if you apply pressure there, it influences this. Okay? So, you want to make sure when you spank your children that you hit the target. That's one reason you don't do it in anger. Be honest. How many of you ever had occasion to spank your child? I mean, you just started flailing. You end up hitting you more than you hit them. Ought never to do that. Spanking. Now, Jacob, here's how we used to do it at Parkdale. We had to spank the kids. Put your hands right down like that. Okay? And sometimes we would even make them lean down over like that. And then we put our hand on their back so they don't get up. And there's your target. Now, the child can't reach back and put his hands back there, so he hit his hands because he's leaning on his hands. And the target's right there for you to take care of business. Then when you're done, stand up, Jacob. Now, you need to spank your children until you get an honest cry. You know, most of them are crying before you ever hit them. If they got any sense, they are. So don't stop just when they start crying. But stop when you sense the crying is sincere. And usually it's 3-4 swats. Then let them cry. They need that. Let them boo-hoo a little while. And then when they're all done boo-hooing, then you go back and you hug them up. And you tell them, I love you. And I did not spank you to hurt you. I spanked you to help you. God gave you to me, and I'm going to be your parent. And when you do wrong, I'm going to spank you just like I did today. But it don't mean I don't love you. And you make sure that they know that you love them. And then you turn them loose. Okay, Jacob, you can go back. All right, so have an economy. Consistency. It's the key. Make sure you handle it properly. Be unified, husbands and wives, in discipline. Don't ever disagree in front of the kids. Mm-mm. They'll use it. And I think I've covered the gamut of discipline there. Anybody have any other questions about discipline while we're there? And let me say this. I dealt with teenagers last week. Let me say this to you about teenagers. Now, Jeremy's a teenager. I think he's the only one we got in here tonight. But some of you, you're going to have teenagers real soon. Hopefully, by the time your child gets to be a teenager, you have instilled enough discipline in them and on them that you shouldn't have to spank a teenager. That's the truth of it. If you started when they're this big and you were consistent in your discipline, and unless they do something totally off the wall, you ought not to have to spank a teenager. They ought to be to the place where you can talk to them in an intelligent way and make sense with them. Okay? Well, it's rough. But that's where it should be. For a teenager to get a spanking is very, very, very embarrassing for a teenager. The little guys can shrug it off real easy. But it means a lot different to a teenager to get a spanking. So, do what you need to do when they're this big so when they get that big, you don't have to put them in that position. All right, that'll help them, that'll help you. Any questions or comments about discipline? I hope that helps you. All right, other questions? Anybody have any other questions about marriage, family, child raising? If you don't, I got a sermon ready. Fred. Told Angela she could get married when she was 29. We almost made it. Try to instill in your children that they don't need to get married as soon as they graduate high school. You know, bring them up with that frame of mind. That yes, you're going to get married one day, but you know, after high school you have college. And let me just say this. Each one of my kids knew when they graduated high school, I expected them to go to at least 1 year of Bible college. That was expected. After that 1 year, we would reevaluate if they didn't turn out to be college material or if there was something else they really felt the Lord wanted them to do, then we would go that direction and readjust. But 1 year of Bible college. Now, there's a couple of things that helps you do. It helps you to give them direction after high school. You know, a lot of kids, you say, what are you going to do after high school? I don't know. What do you want to be? I don't know. Do you know anything? I don't know. Where if you instill that in your children, what are you going to do after high school? Well, I'm going to go to 1 year of Bible college. All right, they've already got that settled. And you would be amazed at what God can do in 1 year of Bible college. It gives God that opportunity to speak to them about the rest of their life. So I just instilled that in my children. All of you, I want at least 1 year of Bible college. And thank the Lord, none of them gave me a hassle. They said, okay, you know, that's cool. Yep, two graduated and Angie went 2 years. So now, that also instills in your children that you expect they're not going to get married right after high school. They're already spoken for. I got a year of college to go to. So instead of having this mindset that a lot of kids grow up with, I'm going to graduate high school and get married. They've already got in their mind, I'm going to graduate high school, go off to a year of college, and then we'll see. So it helps you to instill that in your children from this high. This is our plan. Now, at what age should you let them get married? It varies. There are some young people who are mature enough to be married, maybe at 20, 22, in that area. There are some of them are 39 and still not mature enough to be married. That's the truth of it. But by and large, I would encourage my kids, don't get married till at least 22. Because that's 4 years of college. And if they can go through 4 years of college, they've learned how to think. They've learned some character. They've stopped and thought about what they want for their life. You know, when a kid's 18, we don't know what we want for our life. We have no idea. And kids yoking up and getting married at 18, no wonder they're getting divorced at 20. They marry somebody at 18 and they've got 18-year-old ideas. But then all of a sudden they start to mature, and you know, this guy at 18, he didn't care what he was or what he did. He gets to be 20, 21, 22 years old, and he starts to think, what do I want to do with the rest of my life? Well, then he decides he wants to go this direction. She decides she wants to go this direction. Now we got a divorce. Where if they've gone through some college and they've set a course for their life, they're looking for somebody who's going the same direction they're going. And so it will help them tremendously. I guess the truth is, put it off as long as you can. Won't hurt them. Amen? And no dating till they're 16. And girls, don't ever car date alone. Don't happen. You save yourself a lot of grief. Other questions? Have we answered everything? Tim. No, we went over that. Double date under certain conditions. That I know the people you're double dating with. I know where you're going. I know what time you're going to be home. You're going there and coming here. You're not going somewhere else. Certain conditions, even on the double date. And that first one about, I know the people you're going with. That's real important. See, down there, and all Bible colleges have this problem with young people wanting to date. Down there at Trinity, they had a rule. If two young people wanted to go on a date, they had to have chaperones. They could go out on a date together, but they had to have a chaperone. And the chaperone had to be one of the girls from the dorm. So some girl would want to go out with a guy, and she'd say, the guy would say, well, can I take you out? She'd say, well, you know, we got to get a chaperone. So she would find a girl, if this was the wrong kind of girl, she would find a girl that would be in cahoots with her, and they would take the chaperone, they'd go out on a date, they'd dump the chaperone somewhere, go do what they want to do, come back, pick up the chaperone, and come back. So even in the double dating thing, you know, sometimes young people get in cahoots with one another and they say, well, my mom and dad won't let me out unless we double date. So you come over, pick us up, take us and drop us off somewhere, and then you come back and get us later and everybody will be happy. So be careful about that. Make sure you know who. And parents, check up on your kids. You say, well, they're going to be upset. They're going to think I don't trust them. That's right. You don't trust them because they're kids. If you have any brains in your head, you won't trust them. Think about this. Hadn't been so long since you were a teenager. Oh. Yeah, some of you are looking that way. You know what I'm talking about. Your mom and dad trusted you. They would have got a big surprise if they had checked up on you. Mm-hmm. Check up on them. If they say we're going to so-and-so's house, call so-and-so. Hey, is my kid over there? If they say something's going on, stop by and see. If they're going to an activity somewhere at another church or something, check it out. Don't just take their word for stuff. They'll lie to you. Not my kid. Well, yours is perfect. Everybody else's will lie, though. Check up on them. That dating thing. Now, understand this. We got the wrong idea about dating. Somebody tell me the purpose of dating. Find a mate. A lot of people have the idea dating is just social life. The truth is, the purpose of dating is to find a mate. You're shopping. You're checking this one out and that one out to see if maybe it'll work. So that ought to tell you something about dating. You know, you ought never date anybody you're not willing to marry. Now, some of you think back to your dating days and who you dated. You say, boy, you blew that one. But see, if there isn't a little bit of interest that this might be the one I'm going to marry, then don't date them. Parents, think about this. If your child never dates anybody that they don't have some kind of inkling they might want to marry them, then they're not ever going to marry the wrong one. Because they're going to keep looking until they find the right one. They've got the right idea about dating. Purpose of dating is ultimately to find the mate. To find that one that God has for you and that you blend with. So dating isn't just this big social life that our society makes it out to be. That's why 11-year-old girls are going out on dates. 11-year-old girl ain't old enough to get married. Not supposed to be anyway. Heard of one recently had a baby. But see, she shouldn't be dating. She's not ready to get married. So that brings us back to Fred's question. Well, how old should they be when they date? When they get married? Well, if they're not old enough to think about getting married, then they're not old enough to date. No reason for it. Amen, preacher. Yes, ma'am. Parents, don't be afraid to say to your children, you know, I don't think you need to hang around so-and-so. Now, listen to me. Don't run that person into the ground and don't give them 17 reasons why they're on drugs or drinking. No, just tell them, look, I'm your parent. I'm responsible to help you. And I think that person is just not good for you. And just let them know that that relationship isn't going to go. You know, Bobby's not good for you, so find another friend. And that'll be a help to your kids. The reason I say don't run them into the ground and give them 27 reasons, here's what happens. You go to your child, you say, Bobby's not good for you, he's on drugs, he's into pornography, he's this, he's that, and you list all these things. You're going to have Bobby's parents on your doorstep. And they're going to say, show me proof. And they're going to be really angry with you over that stuff. And if you don't have proof, you're in a bad place. Better you just tell your children, look, they're just not good for you. And leave it at that. The other thing is, how many of you know that kids have a big mouth? Over there when I taught at Trinity, we had a rule. And we told the kids, or the parents, we said, look, we won't believe anything your kids tell us about you if you don't believe anything they tell us.